I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection, live from Baghdad. Way back in the history of this land, when Iraq was called Mesopotamia, back in the days of Nebuchadnezzar, true power always came down from on high. Today, residents of Baghdad only have to look at the military helicopters above them to remind themselves who has that true power now. Though the American presence is never far from anyone's mind, life goes on. Basim Azedi is a baker, but when he goes to pick up his sacks of subsidized flour, he lifts out a handful and sniffs at it in disgust. When I want to bake with this, he says, it's a total failure. There's been no improvement in the quality of the flour. According to the old system, he says, we should be getting Australian flour, but someone is selling that to smugglers. He says this is Iraqi flour. It's only good for chickens. On a nearby street corner of the Nas neighborhood in Karada, people are lined up at a newly painted office to get their coupons for subsidized tanks of propane for cooking. Mohammed Al-Rubeli is the local member of the District Advisory Council.
It's difficult now in the gas because the winter is coming and the gas is very little, not too much gas. Bottle gas is many people in the Karada is 16,000 family and the gas is not too much, and we need to make some good situation, and we give all the people, not one take in the 1,000 dinar or 5,000 dinar or 6,000 dinar is too much. We give him in small price. His 500 dinar, his 500 is or maybe 750 dinars. Because his cheap price.
That works out to about 40 cents for a tank of gas, and that kind of savings means a great deal to people in Baghdad as prices are constantly rising. There's also money to help repair the schools and help run the local medical clinics. Mohammed says the money comes from the American-run CPA. The U.S. also pays for men to guard the office and for his own bodyguards. He says that not much gets done without the Americans' permission.
Right now we make, but it's step by step. It's not because it's difficult for the money. Now, you know, we not responsible. We have permission. We didn't have permission only to want to go together with the U.S. Army, together with the ministry. He gave me the order, and we make the order.
Across the city, at the Orfali Art Gallery, the main room has been turned into a large meeting area. The group that oversees all these offices and all this money is holding one of its twice-weekly meetings. Several members of the American-run CPA are listening in as their district council representatives explain what's going on across the city. Amal Rassam is a retired professor of anthropology from New York City, and she's listening to a range of questions from her people. In this case, they're trying to figure out how the old system fits with the new one. How do we work with the tribal leaders, they want to know? How does the Iraqi version of the neighborhood ward boss, the Mukhtar, fit in? How do we run a meeting? What if we have a plan and someone wants to speak? How do we get more women in? What do we tell the poor people if they ask for help? The kingdom for a copy of Robert's Rule of Order in Arabic. In some parts of Baghdad, the district and neighborhood councils are all but dormant, but in others, they are a feisty hint of democracy to come. But those questions, more questions. Where is the list of our powers? What are our powers? What do we do if bad people and criminals ask to join the council? What do we do to make sure the different religions and different nationalities are included? Samir Saleh is one of the local consultants working with the American group RTI. That's the Research Triangle Institute Local Governance Project. He says when people in his neighborhood want something, they make a proposal.
For example, we have a school, rebuilding of a school. So we can take this project to the RTI, and they can follow the procedures in order to follow this project. So this is the work I do.
When someone says to you, this democracy you talk about, what is it? What do you say to them?
For example, if we have dirty water, what's the use of democracy and those people having dirty water? what's the use of democracy when we have insecurity? So first of all, we have to provide security, we have to provide the water, we have to provide food, and then we have to talk about democracy.
You think the people are eager to talk about democracy?
Are eager to talk about, but democracy is just words nowadays. We are waiting.
It's just words.
We want to achieve this democracy, but we have to meet the needs of the people first, and then we have to achieve democracy.
So what are the priorities? It's one thing to plant the seeds, but can something like democracy be rushed into place? It's not as if the Iraqi people aren't eager for a say in their lives, but there are still so many questions. Much of the assistance has come already from American Iraqis. Much of the work's being done by people here who've volunteered to help out. We have two such people with us as guests in our Baghdad studio, and this is your chance to ask them questions. Is there room in the Western concept of democracy for the religious and tribal elements in this society? Can you talk about rights of assembly and free speech while the country remains under military control? Would it be better to stand back and let Iraq's new system evolve naturally? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us in the studio this hour, Imad Saleh. He is a member of the District Council of Al-Mansur. Welcome to the program, Imad.
Welcome.
Nice to have you here. We also have with us Imal Rassam. She is a retired professor of anthropology from New York City, but for the past 5 months she has been here in the land of her birth. She works with the RTI, USAID, Local Governance Project. Imal, welcome to The Connection.
Thank you.
A busy 5 months for you it's been, I guess.
Yes, sir. It has been busy, but difficult, but also very gratifying.
Now, unlike a number of people who have left Iraq some 20, 30 years ago, you have been back and forth since you left at, what, about age 20, is that right?
Yes. My family lives here, or has lived here all their life. We are from Mosul, from the north, but my father moved to Baghdad, moved the family. He was a lawyer. And up until 1991, they lived in Baghdad.
Did you ever think that you'd be coming back to do this kind of work? Was it something that you thought might happen?
No, I always knew one day I'm going to come back to Iraq in some capacity or another, but I did not think that I was going to come back and do this specific kind of work. My father passed away 2 years ago in the United States, and we promised him that, or he made us promise, I should say, that when Saddam goes, we will come and see a free Iraq, and here we are.
More than come and see it, it's help come and try and put one together.
try our best.
And Imad, you're not a graduate of political science, you
No.
are an engineer.
I'm a civil engineer. I finished my high national diploma in Britain, Manchester, 1983, and I started my district council, advisory council in Mansour about 5 months ago. I think we're doing all right.
What was it that made you want to get involved? Because I've heard from so many people, I don't want to have anything to do with the Americans, that sort of thing. Why did you join?
Well, to be quite honest, it was my dream to participate in building a new Iraq if everything, you know, goes all right.
And are you working on that now? Do you think that
I'm doing my best. I'm doing my best, and I don't know what's going to happen.
It seems in many ways, I guess, Imal, that what you're doing is not really a lesson in political science, but a lesson in listening, in finding out what it is the people want.
That's part of what we do. We are really, in a sense, doing what you might call community organization, capacity building. It's a civil society initiative in some ways. We're trying to encourage lay the foundations, if you like, of some sort of a civil society where the average citizen is provided some forum in which to express their voices, in which to get organized in a better way, in which to cooperate with irrespective of ethnicity or religion, in which to make their demands, organize their demands, prioritize them, and maybe take them up to higher level and make them heard at a higher level, whether it is now liaison with the CPA or with the new ministries that are in place at this point.
But how do you decide what's in and what's out? I mean, when I was on the street today, people were talking to me about the need for gas, for cooking gas, mm-hmm. and just the really simple, practical things that they want. Schools, for mm-hmm. example. Is that the level that you're operating at now?
We don't decide for anybody. We just provide them with the forum in which to get together, whether we at the neighborhood level or at the district level, and they decide. They know what they need, and they decide. They tell us what they need. They tell each other, and sometimes some of these needs can be worked out at the neighborhood level. Sometimes they can be worked out. We also help to connect them with some donors who might be able. Right now, this is an interim period. This is a transitional period, and these councils are advisory and interim. And so one of the things we try to do is to try to connect them with some donors, some people who are in some organizations, non-governmental organizations from abroad, who are in a position maybe to help them realize some very small-scale project, whether it is reconstructing a school or providing medicine in a hospital that has been looted or a clinic that has been looted, or whether it is to reinstall lights in a small side street in their neighborhood. These are small, doable sort of projects.
Okay, but Ahmad, how do you decide what it is that you do and what it is you can't do? Because people will come to the local neighborhood or the district councils with a list that's this long of all the different things that they need. It's not just a school necessarily or a clinic, but it's fixing the roads or where is my mother's pension check? All yes. these sorts of things. How do you decide what's in and what's out?
Well, the first thing we always do with the people is to try them to understand that the council, these councils are advisory only. I mean, we don't execute things. Our main job is trying to link up, you know, the needs of the people and then we transmit it to the CPA.
But it is a form of power, though, because somebody will come to you and say, our school needs a new door, and you'll say, fine, we'll make the recommendation,
okay,
and the door gets built.
It is a kind of, but we always need some more empowering. We need to be empowered a bit more. In every meeting, I keep asking for some more entitlement to do things and to get some confidence for the member of the council to be creative. Without the power, you won't be able to do anything. I mean, people will
they'll just pay no attention to you.
They pay no attention, exactly.
And Amal, I heard this in the meeting that you were chairing today. People were saying, you know, give me a cell phone, give me a badge, give me a piece of paper that says I can do something.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have, I think if you keep this is a less than a 5-month experiment in a sense. That is, we have to keep a sense of the time and the context in which these things are taking place. When we started out, which was in the beginning of May, just the idea that we could go to neighborhoods, you have to remember, people have been, the sanctions in place for 10 years, a war with Iran for
eight years
before that. Not to mention Saddam's
And even before that, it was backwarded quite.
Right. So things were at a really low, and there was the war. So there was at a very low point.
True. And we'll pick that up when we come back after the break. Our telephone number, 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Now, Connection listeners, you've heard a lot about democracy, you've heard a lot about Iraq, and you have two people here in the studio who can talk about how the two are coming together at this point. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection, live from Baghdad. Support. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection, live from Baghdad this hour, and we're talking about the beginning of democracy in this country, an attempt to plant the seeds at the local level. We're talking about 88 neighborhoods in Baghdad alone, which are lumped under 9 different districts. We can't forget the fact that this is happening all over the country, but because we're broadcasting from Baghdad, we're concentrating on that this hour. My guests are Amal Rassam. She's a retired professor of anthropology from New York. She's working here in Iraq with RTI USAID Local Governance Project. Imad Saleh is currently a member of the District Council. That's in the Baghdad district of Al-Mansur. Now, Imad, you've been here all through the troubled times that we're talking about.
Oh, yes.
You were never living abroad since the early 80s. Tell me what people in Al-Mansur are saying. Are there people who will come to you and say, Iman, what are you doing? You're collaborating with the people who are occupying us, with the Americans.
They do say that. They do say that. But I try always to explain to them that this is our time. I mean, these people are here only for, you know, for a period of time until everything is in the right place, almost. Or they, we have to lunch with you know, with a spot. Now, this spot is, you know, this is it. I mean, this is the time. This is the right time for it. This is the time we've been dreaming of to implement things we've been thinking to do. I mean, we are ahead. The world is ahead of us in some of the areas, about 200 or 150 years ahead of us. So we have to get together, and we have to start do something. Without this right start, we won't be able to catch with the rest of the world.
Is there a danger that if the occupation lasts too long, because many people have said to me, Americans are losing friends every day that they stay here, is there a danger that if the occupation goes on for years and years, that it may not be the opportunity after all?
Well, let me tell you something. I noticed that the American, to be quite honest, that the American are not trying to squeeze the difference in cultural, the difference in cultural and thinking between the Iraqis and the American. They always sort of insist on what they think until they get something wrong. They realize that they have done it wrong, and this is what I've been trying to tell them, and other members of the district trying to tell them. I mean, they're not taking our way; they're taking their way. Now, the thing is, if they move to Iraq and occupy, let's say, they have to take or to consider the Iraqi way. And some, for example, the security issue. Sometimes you have to be so harsh on some people to get the truth or to protect the others. They're not doing this thing. They apprehend and detain people for only a few hours, 3 or 4 hours. In that case, people won't help the American. They won't inform any American about any dirty or looter or anyone, because they'll be afraid that he will come out in 4 or 5 days and shoot me and kill me, and no one ask.
And Amal, from your perspective, are you sitting in these meetings and catching yourself and saying, I'd love to tell people what to do, but I'm not here to do that?
Sometimes people actually do ask you what do you suggest that we do in certain situations. I think being an Iraqi American myself, I think people do give me that chance that I am, if you like, bicultural or privy to both cultures in a sense. And I find in general that they want to learn, they want to catch up, as Ahmad said. They know that since Saddam came to power, Iraq has been cut off. People are eager, they're hungry, they know in fact, what has happened to Iraq is we have gone backwards, if you like. We have deteriorated, we have devolved, we have gone backwards. So people are eager. And if they know that you come to them in good faith, and are genuinely they trust you, then they do appreciate and they do want to know what you know. So I don't find that a problem in a sense. Sometimes we are unable to help, but we try to cooperate all together and try to find the best way to do certain things.
All right. National Public Radio listeners, this is an opportunity for you to speak to people who literally are on the front lines of trying to figure out what democracy in Iraq is now, what it could be, and what it will be, particularly at this moment while the U.S. is here with such a large military presence. So I encourage you to take advantage of that. Our number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Let's take our first call from Savannah, Georgia. Ron is on the line. Hi, Ron.
Yeah, hi. How are you? It's a really wonderful program. My comment is this. I've traveled quite a bit all over the world, and I find that democracy manifests itself in various ways. And I think if we are going to help to set up a democracy, I think we have to be sensitive that the brand of democracy, which is necessary in Iraq, might not be the exact same one which we have at home. While the principles may be the same, I think we need to be flexible relative to the culture, you know, and I hope that we are doing that. Otherwise, I think we're going to find ourselves coming onto obstacles which might not necessarily be necessary.
I was thinking just exactly the same thing, Ron, as I was going through the list of all the different aspects of Iraqi society that have certain bits of power now, the tribal leaders and the mosques, the neighborhood mukhtars, who are, I don't know, kind of like a form of notary public, but a little bit with slightly better records on everybody in the neighborhood. Some people compare them, Imad, to the mukhabarat, because they keep these kind of records. I don't think that's necessarily a great comparison, but how do you figure out where democracy, your type of civil basic democracy, fits when everybody else wants to do this same thing, when everybody else wants it, because it is a form of power?
It is. It is. And it is their right to say whatever they want, and it is their right to suggest things. But the thing is, nowadays, we are so, you know, in a short period, you know, within a short period, this is something new for the Iraqis. I mean, the councils are some, you know, it is something new for them. They're not used to it. They've always been centralized by the old regime, and the old regime dictated their lives. That's why they're not used to it. That's why they don't know what to do with the democracy. They don't realize what democracy is all about. They think it's only they've taken it in the wrong way, I think, because they're not used to it. They are, as we say, they are right behind, you know, years behind. So they need some more time until things get settled down.
Amal, one of the biggest areas of criticism would be that it's working, sure, but it's only working because you have money behind you. Because if someone wants to get a school fixed or something, you guys have the money to do it. And as soon as that disappears, then perhaps this will, the whole experiment might disappear as well, that the power goes back into the mosque, or the power goes back to the tribal leaders.
Well, there is power in the mosque, and there is power with the tribal leaders, and that will stay. That's part of our social makeup, our social organization here. But there is also power in a secular middle class also, that perhaps now is not very much in the forefront of things, because things are unsettled. If you recall, the Iraqis have been living in fear and terror and oppression. So I think certain elements, what I'd like to remind maybe the audience, or bring up to the audience, is that if you go back to our history in the 40s and the 50s, we had a kind of a parliamentary system that was working. We had civil organizations that were in place. We had unions that were genuine unions and that were working. So it is not something completely alien to us, but it's alien certainly to a generation at least. So it's true that the council experiment or initiative is very small scale, very limited, and we are always emphasizing that it is an interim. But one can hope, for example, that even if this little money we have, we don't have great amount of money, will disappear, that the seeds of self-reliance and initiative will take root. And that the people, and we are hoping that there will be genuine elections very soon in Iraq, and that the councils then, or the members who want to stand up for elections, will do that, and we will have real empowerment of these councils. So it's really a very small scale, experimental, if you like, initiative. And I don't think that the money, whether it's the grants that we offer, or the help that the military or the CPA has offered, is necessarily the only driving force behind it.
All right, Ron, thanks a lot for your call. Let's go to Boston next. Todd's on the line. Hi, Todd, go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to ask a question. As an American that's interested in getting the troops out of Iraq, I'm curious if the Iraqi people would rather have the Americans, the military there to put in an American-style democracy, or if they would rather have us out sooner. at the risk of the feudal warlords and the and those kind of historical governing bodies that have been there over time. And I can take my answer off here.
All right, Todd, you're asking in a way, though, if the Americans left earlier rather than later, is there a danger that, that some of these democratic ideas won't remain?
Yeah, and I guess that piece about what is culturally, what do the Iraqi people prefer? I mean, is it really that they would rather have their more traditional form of government, or is there enough of the democracy taking hold that they would like to have, or there's a sense of this American-style democracy?
Well, we still, I think we still haven't experienced any democracy until now. So it's too early to say these things right now. I mean, from my opinion.
What would happen if the troops left in March?
Chaos.
More chaos.
More chaos. Definitely.
And are you telling me that there would be that chaos because the Iraqis are, at this point, too divided, unable to find a way to work together?
Exactly.
Is that the reason?
Yes.
But is a piece of paper or is a council chamber going to make a difference there?
No.
So what can change? You see what I'm saying? If the Americans stay long enough that some of these seeds of democracy are allowed to flourish.
I think we have to institutionalize some of these things. These are still at the beginning. And whether it is councils or whether it is any civil society, non-governmental organizations or councils, we have to give them some time. We've got to nourish them. We've got to support them.
Yeah.
We have to institutionalize them. At this point, they don't have a legislative format. They are, as I say, but we, in hopefully, the CPA now is keeping the place together. There is a power vacuum if the Americans or the CPA leaves now, obviously, and there are many contending forces or powers that would want to step in. And I think definitely this is my own thing, there is always the fear that you might have, as in any power vacuum, you've got people on the ready who are going to step in and compete for power. And that is something I have not heard any Iraqi, really, whom I've worked with, said, yeah, we want the Americans out right now.
No, I don't think so.
Because they are very, they know what might happen, and
yes,
that is not a scenario that anybody would want.
Because they can
That's
feel
a personal it. Opinion.
Because they can feel, I think the Iraqis, all the Iraqis can feel there's something hidden. Yeah. Once the American will leave, yeah, that will come up.
But is that going to happen no matter what? I guess what I'm trying to understand here is that you're talking about institutionalizing mm-hmm. notions of democracy, mm-hmm. and I'm just trying to understand how it is that bit of institutionalization will prevent this bubbling up.
No, I don't think you need to tie the two together. I think what he is probably, Ahmad is talking about, is there are certain elements that are just waiting, in a sense. He's talking in a political sense. I'm talking in a democratic institutional sense.
But all I'm saying, Amal, is that they'll still be there 3 years
not
from
necessarily,
now.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. They may well, just...
I think
come up to the surface and
join the real political process
or whatever.
Yeah. I think once everything is settled down, these things will finish.
They just go by themselves.
By themselves.
We're talking about real opposition, real extremist elements that want to seize power
and
take power
and take advantage of all the bad things happening now. Yeah.
Okay, let's move along to another call to Augusta, Georgia, and Chad's joining us. Hi, Chad, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, I was just listening about the power being seized by extremist elements. One thing about democracy is that it seems to me that it only works if the people want it. And my question is, and some more to think about, is why didn't the U.S., as soon as it got there, I know it would have been tough to figure that out, but just allow for free elections immediately. Say, okay, this population of people, you get X many representatives, and so elect them, and those people then write the Constitution rather than appointing these people, and it just makes it very suspicious for the people, so the people, you know, are very unsettled about it, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Chad, thanks a lot for your call, Ahmad. What would have happened if we were looking elections right now.
Just can't be happened. It just cannot be happened because people they don't realize, they don't have the culture of election. They've been away from these things for about 40 or 50 years now. How can I give them free election? So many factions, so many parties, so many elements, you know, and the thing is, Iraq has been, you know, the borders been open for about 7 or 8 months. All, you know, all factions has been in. I mean, America said that we're going to convert Iraq into the front line against terrorists, and it is now.
It
and believe it, in one hour, five blast explosions in Baghdad. I mean, you were there. And so talking about election and free election is something out of, you know, out of question.
Is it, though, something, Amal, that you'd like to see happen as quickly as possible?
I think I certainly not only like it happen, but I know it will happen. As to when it should happen, I agree with Imad. I don't think this is really right now the time. This is definitely not only a post-conflict situation, oh, yes. But it is an active conflict situation in many ways. You know the security issues here. And as my colleague here, Imad, said, borders were open. We have all kinds of elements that have come in. We have lots of weapons out, you know, in the streets. We have many elements that are still very active. And these are not really conditions for any real elections to take place. We need universal registration. We need real, for real parties to come to the fore. And we have to have the people, in a sense, themselves get ready for elections. So elections will take place, but I really am not sure at this point. When, and I don't think this is the right time.
1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Your chance to join a live broadcast direct from Baghdad with people who are literally every day putting their hands in the as-yet-unformed clay of whatever this country is going to become. And it's really an opportunity that you ought to take advantage of. A quick note, we will have on our website, www.theconnection.org, images of our guests, and we're going to be back right after the break. I'm Dick Gordon. We're broadcasting live from Baghdad. You're listening to The Connection, broadcasting live from Baghdad, and we're talking about democracy in this country. It is still just words to most people here, but certainly at the grassroots level, there are people gathering trying to figure out how they can work as neighborhoods or districts to get things like schools repaired and clinics paid for. Can you talk about, though, larger things like rights of assembly and free speech while the country remains under military control? What needs to change there? Our number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. With me in the studio, Imad Saleh. He's a member of the district council of the Baghdad district of Al-Mansur. He was a civil engineer before he decided to dip his toes into this sort of political waters. Amal Rassam is a retired professor of anthropology from New York. But she's been here in this country for the past 5 months, working with the Research Triangle Institute, USAID, Local Governance Project. Much of the money that is in the kitty that these different councils can draw from is coming from the United States, and it's being doled out based on the decisions of people in this country. But it is money from the United States, and that's a factor in our conversation as well. 1-800-423-8255. Alexander is joining us now from Durham, North Carolina. Hi, Alexander.
Hello. Hello. I have this question. Well, we know that democratic institutions are really meaningless without being perceived as legitimate by the people whom they're supposed to serve. So my question is, what makes the councils legitimate? I know that most of them have been appointed by the Americans. Where there have been elections, those elections have been very, very limited.
May I?
Could I
jump in here, Alexander? Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Yes. Let me explain it a little bit to you.
Yeah.
In some parts, some councils, in some governorates, you know, Iraq has 18 different governorates, of which Baghdad is one.
Yeah.
In some governorates, you are absolutely right. these councils were, in a sense, formed by or appointed by either commanders or because they had the need to do so very, very quickly and as a point of contact with people. In the case we are talking about here in Baghdad, we have 88 neighborhood councils, and while they are far from being perfect because we had no real elections, we went through some process of like, a caucusing kind of process and then some kind of selection. And most of them, in the vast majority of them, not all of them, but in the vast majority, the representatives or the members on these councils have been really selected by the people in the area or in the neighborhoods. Now, I don't want to claim that these are perfect councils or perfect, and I want to go back, and you raise the issue of legitimacy, which is a very, very good issue. They are not, in a sense, there is no legitimacy at this point because we have no constitution yet in Iraq, and we don't have really, until such time as we have a constitution, and the constitution through its legislative decides whether these councils are going to, what role they're going to take and what is their status. In that sense, you're right, they are not legitimate legally, but I don't think it means they're not legitimate socially.
That's exactly the kind of legitimacy that I wanted to ask you about. I mean, I'm not asking about like the legal legitimacy of the councils, because the legitimacy in the law. I'm asking about whether the processes of selection, for example, that you undertook were seen by the people as legitimate. Which people, whether the people who took part in the canvassing process were really seen as legitimate people to take part in that process, whether the results are acceptable. Now, we know there's countries...
Hang on a second, Alexander. Imad in here. Go ahead.
I can assure you that everyone have been elected in this council have been elected chosen with the free will from his own people, from the people in the same neighborhood he is elected in, and most of them are doing fine now, and with the little factors, with the little help he's got, they're doing fine.
But what happens though, Imad, if one of the members on the neighborhood council is discovered to be joining that council simply so he can get some money as a contractor and line his own pocket?
Yes, and that happened.
That happened.
Sure,
that
right?
happened,
and
they
all been dismissed.
By who?
By the council itself.
So
by the member of the council.
There's a vote in the council
if somebody's... Yes. When they decide something on somebody, it would be taken, a majority, and he'll be out.
These councils have rules and have regulations...
Yes.
And in some cases, I don't want to claim that we don't have people who are there who are taking advantage of that position illegitimately, if you want. In some cases, surely some specific people tried to take over or hijack the councils. That has happened also. It is far from any kind of real... But regardless of that, for the most part, and some people are not... There are a lot of people in Baghdad who don't really care for these councils or who view them as not a very... not so much legitimate, but not significant or not important, or maybe as being cooperating with the CPA. All that is found. But regardless of all that, the councils are up and are active, and very more important, I think, they are serving as a forum for natural leaders also to emerge, who do not have maybe any other option at this or any other way at this point. So we have people who are coming out as leaders in these councils.
That's right.
Do either of you worry about your own safety, though? Because, I mean, we had the incident of Akila al-Hashimi, who was killed. There have been mayors and judges who have been assassinated.
And two members of the council been shot.
Yes.
3 days ago, three nights ago, at Al-Karkh. His name was Mustafa. And the other one in Al Adil, he got a car bomb.
Absolutely, I think the people in the councils are taking risks. As we said earlier, there are these elements who are out there to undermine whatever stability one can hope for or one can achieve. And the CPA is taking precautions to protect these councils building, whether it's making them more secure. So I think that the members of the council are really put to the test, and they are very much. There is a problem.
Tell me, Ahmad, in your view, though, whether or not it is discouraging people from getting involved? Are people saying, no, I don't want to have anything to do with the council? You guys are targets.
Well, it depends. I mean, it depends on your personality, your wishes, your love to your country, to your own country.
Does it have the reverse effect, though, where people say, you know, they're shooting our people.
Yeah.
It's up to us to stop them. Are there Iraqis who are saying, this has gone too far. Now they're shooting our own people.
Well, and this is how they get the hatred of the people now. Because so many people, refuse the whole idea of shooting the good people trying to build up the country.
Let's take another call to Roger now, who's standing by in Worcester, Massachusetts. Hi, Roger. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Dick. Thanks for taking my call. And thank you to the guests for the fine work that you're doing trying to rebuild a civil society. My question goes to that point. Basically, from my perspective, that for democracy to have any meaning, there has to be certain institutions that are in place and functioning, such as a judicial system that works, the respect for property, the respect for contracts, the rule of law, a free press. What is being done sort of at the local levels to try to instill these ideas and ideals so that democracy can flourish? And I have a quick follow-up question to that after taking this answer, if that's all right.
Okay, just hang on, Roger. I mean, I think
it's a very good question, and it's something that we are thinking about. The last few months, with all our work and energy, as I say, in cooperation with the CPA and so on, has been really to form these councils and to help them to more or less a little bit, have some kind of staying power, if you like. And now we are turning into a public, perhaps, awareness campaign where we can, exactly as you said, we can have start to kind of disseminate, if you like, in public fora, these ideas about the rule of law, the principles, the values of democracy, and so on.
But
so
without that is, all that, you kind of have to make up your own rules in the interim, don't you?
We absolutely have to do that as we go along. But this is the next step. Now we feel we can start to do that, and we will get the help also of the councils, people who have been that. We have a big fund of Iraqis at all levels who know exactly what democracy is about, who know exactly what the rule of law is about. The country is not starting from point zero. We have all this resources here. We have universities. We have institutes. We have
intellectual.
We have a very rich intellectual society group, and we're going to be drawing on these people in collaboration with also people from outside to help us to start to do a public campaign.
Roger, back to you.
Well, I appreciate that answer, and I also appreciate the difficulty of the task ahead. But one sort of fundamental question that keeps coming up in my mind is I've heard messages from the Bush administration and hence the CPA, essentially, that you can have any sort of democracy you want as long as it's a Western U.S.-style capitalist democracy. And does that sort of rig the game, and does that take away from the legitimacy of the exercise if you're saying you can do whatever you want as long as you come up with my answer? And I'm not sure if you have a legitimate democracy if the people say, oh, actually, we want to have some form of socialism, and the CPA says, oh, no, that you can't do that. Has that tension been drawn out? Has there been further discussions? What's going on the ground with respect to the options that have been declared legitimate by the CPA?
I mean, part of this, I guess, is linked, Roger, to your first question, where, you know, how do you do anything and call it democratic when none of the institutions upon which democracy is founded are in place here? Amal very eloquently said that the intellectual understanding of them is there, but the Constitution is being drafted. The Constitution gives you a division of powers. The division of powers tells you what you can do as a council. And I think that he's put his finger on a very real concern, that because the American administration is making the rules here, that the American administration will say the democracy must fit this mold. Can you say that won't happen?
To some extent.
In what way, Ahmad? Because Iraqis won't allow that to happen?
Yes.
Explain that.
Well, I mean, as you said, the Iraqis have, traditions, yeah, because of their different traditions, they wouldn't allow this.
I mean, in the long run, it's going to be Iraqi democracy. And whatever form it takes, it's ultimately the Iraqis who are going to decide, because they're the ones who are going to live it.
Well, they're also the ones who have to accept it, because if the Kurds don't like the form of federalism that is presented or that they are a part of forming, they're not going to participate,
but
neither
the
Sunni, neither
the
Shia. I'm not saying that. No, I understand that, but I'm saying that. And you're in this as well. People were asking you in the meeting today, how do we bring in more women? How do we, bring in the different nationalities and the religions? It's not just a straight election.
It's a process, and I believe that we've got to start with the process. And it's a learning process. It's also a process that, I mean, I think the Iraqis are tired. They are frustrated. They've had a very generation has not had any options or chances, and we're not going to have it tomorrow. There is no such thing as having democracy tomorrow. But ultimately, democracy is not the monopoly of any group or any country. It's a human right, and it's like all human rights, it belongs to everybody, and that's how I feel about it.
Do you think the people, Ahmad, have the patience to wait?
Well, they have to.
They have no
option.
Whether
they like it or not. They have to.
I want to thank both of you for coming in and being part of our program today. Ahmad Saleh, thank you so much for coming.
You're welcome.
Amal Rassan, thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
And also a special thanks to Rob Johnson, also with the Research Triangle Institute, who was standing by to help us out on the program. A note, you can see pictures of the meeting today and what we had in our, the people we had in our tape piece at the beginning. They're all on our website. We're at theconnection.org. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection, live from Baghdad.